Welcome back to Fork This with Intoxicate. I am your host, Intoxicate Kate Slentz, and right now I am currently getting my Java fix with Jason Richter, owner of Path Coffee Roasters in Portchester. He just launched this beautiful tasting room, which I literally just want to kind of move into. Is that all right, Jason?
You can move in.
Just kind of
we'll put a cot over there in the corner.
I mean, yeah. This is beautiful. This is like my dream kitchen. Gorgeous space. You've got a whole bunch of different ways to make coffee right here. I mean, as long as you're making the coffee in the morning, I think I'm coming.
I'll be here.
So tell me a little bit about why you first got into coffee.
So I'm actually fourth generation. My father's in coffee. My father's father was in coffee, and his grandfather was in coffee. I'm not sure to what extent, but they were all in coffee. And so when I grew up, I was obviously always surrounded by it. I remember, you know, my father would come home at night and he would smell like coffee. Mm. So that's a great coffee memory for me. I would just, you know, when I was in high school, I worked in his roastery here in Portchester. I worked in the packaging room, and I always claimed that the clocks were slowed down. It was such a horrible job. But, you know, the people that do that job, they're fantastic. But it was just so hard for me because I was just like, I like moving around a lot.
Yeah.
And that is that's a tough job for
tedious.
Me.
Tedious.
It's a tedious job, yeah. But it's a super important one. And yeah, so that's how I got in coffee. But I moved out to L.A. for about a decade after college, started drinking a bunch of specialty coffee out there, and then decided to come back, be closer to family, and get into the business, and just love specialty coffee. So I wanted to start sort of pursuing that avenue, and I started Path Coffee Roasters back in 2013.
So tell me a little bit about Path Coffee Roasters and what you do here, what your kind of mission is right here in Portchester.
Well, you know, I always wanted to offer a really unique but approachable coffee for people to enjoy. Me, like so many other people, early on in my coffee journey, I was not drinking specialty coffee. Mm-hmm. So it was obviously, you know, somewhat roasty, and a lot of nuance that you can find in coffees didn't exist. And it was just coffee. It wasn't like an enjoyable thing like people drink beer or wine or something like that. I mean, the flavor wasn't, I didn't have a problem with it, but it wasn't like something I was drawn towards as a culinary product in a way. And so what I try to do here at Path is create a culinary product, something that people will enjoy drinking, something that it will excite your palate, something that every sip is a little bit different. It changes as it goes from hot to cooler. I look for coffees that are sweet, have really beautiful, fruity, balanced acidity, some rich flavor, and just coffees that are enjoyable to drink. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of my mission. And you know, to help whether it's the regular retail consumer or business, sort of improve their coffee program. That's my focus. That's my goal.
And I think you're right about, you know, there's this kind of been this, you know, coffee revolution, if you will, with how we've look at coffee. I mean, I think for a lot of people, couple years ago, coffee was just the thing that you had to have in the morning to get going. You know, you're chugging it down. It wasn't something that you were really thinking about, really tasting different flavors. And now I feel like it is more of a culinary product. People are, it's almost like you can do a coffee tasting like you can do a wine tasting. You know, there's just so many different varieties of beans and the way you roast it, just so many little variations that can make the cup of coffee taste so different, which I want to get into as well. But what do you think kind of transpired to kind of push people in this direction of really sitting down and enjoying a cup of coffee and actually tasting what's going on?
It's like the foodie culture all of a sudden. It just popped out of nowhere with like Top Chef and all of these cooking shows, Food Network. You know, food is meant to be enjoyed. Mm-hmm. You know, it obviously sustains us. But if you're not enjoying the food, you should move on and find something you do enjoy eating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, probably shouldn't be chocolate all day long. But there are so many great things out there to consume. And so if you're going to eat something, you might as well enjoy it. And I think people started to get attuned to that. And just like anything else, they start to look at different products and how do we get it to taste better. And coffee, there are certain coffees out there that are fabulous, but then we've ultimately cultivated these flavors over time as well. Mm-hmm. So we've processed the coffees differently. And we always, you know, these farmers who are out there day in and day out, they're always trying to improve on the flavor of their coffee. How they harvest the coffee, how they process the coffee. Is it a washed coffee, a natural coffee, a honeyed coffee? And then obviously the roaster, you know, how we interpret that coffee in our roasting. And then, you know, if you get a good cup of coffee, that's a phenomenal thing. I mean, there's so many steps. It always kind of pains me when people are a bit turned off by a $2 cup of coffee or $3 cup of coffee, especially if it's a good cup of coffee, because these coffees come from third world countries. They mm-hmm. have to go through so many stages to become good mm-hmm. so that you can drink it and enjoy it. From where it's planted, how that tree is tended to over its lifetime, how it's picked, how it's processed, how it's dried, then how it's shipped, then how we roast it, and then ultimately how somebody goes ahead and brews the coffee. Mm-hmm. You know, if you take a great coffee, And you can massacre it with poor brewing. Oh, give me 1 second.
Yeah, no problem. So I have to give you a little bit of props because there's a lot of really great coffee shops in Westchester, which I'm sure you're aware of. Love them for, they're all different for very different reasons. But I would say that this is not my first time here. I've been here a couple of times. And the first time here, you really opened my eyes to the world of coffee and the whole science behind everything. You know, I came here to visit. It was before you had this beautiful tasting room. You basically taught me how to make the best cup of coffee at home. And just, you know, this whole education process, which I think also, you know, with people wanting to learn more about their food and their beverages and where everything is coming from, I think has also kind of enhanced and improved the way we look at various things, including coffee. So I first have to thank you for that.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And just let everyone know, I'm just dropping some knowledge that you drop knowledge.
Trying to drop some knowledge.
Yeah. That I just think I look at that cup of coffee so differently now. Like it's still a huge part of my morning. It's my morning ritual, but that cup of coffee, it's not just something that is a side note. It is something that I stop and enjoy every morning, which kind of sets the tone for my day.
Cool.
Yeah. I mean,
coffee is delicious.
Coffee is delicious.
Well, it can be. It can also be pretty bad.
Well, that's true. But you are the person that stopped me from putting cream and sugar in my coffee.
And you know what? When you drink a good cup of coffee, you don't need any milk and sugar.
And this is a fact.
This is a fact. And typically, people who put milk and sugar in their coffee, I believe, are doing it because they don't like the flavor of their coffee.
Agreed.
I mean, you wouldn't add milk and sugar to your wine.
No, no.
So it's weird that you add it to your coffee. But if you're not drinking coffee that's like palatable, yeah, I mean, I guess milk and sugar, milk, you know, cuts it, mm-hmm. you know, smooths it out quite a bit, gets rid of those really unpleasant bitter notes. And then you have the sugar, which is, who doesn't like sugar?
Right. I mean, well, you know, it's not exactly the best for you, but.
No. And so if you're drinking a better cup of coffee, you are paying a little bit more for it, as you should, mm-hmm. but you're also eliminating the milk and the sugar, which are added costs, but also added calories that you mm-hmm. don't probably need.
So let's talk a little bit about the cost of coffee, because I'm glad that you brought this up. And when people maybe possibly balk at prices of coffee, can you just speak, because this is, you know, something that I, now knowing what I know about the process, now I know why coffee is, why it costs the way it costs. Can you speak a little bit about that process and what goes into it so people kind of can understand why specialty coffees would cost more than like your Maxwell House and
yeah,
your
sure.
local grocery
I mean,
store?
Okay, so specialty coffees are the way that they are harvested and processed and grown in many cases drastically different than how a lower grade commodity coffee is is done as well, as is harvested and processed. Specialty coffees are grown at very high elevations on the sides of mountains, in tropical, you know, along the equator, typically, mm-hmm. and in third world countries. There are no roads to speak of, basically like dirt paths that cars can sometimes get up. And everything is done by hand. No mechanical picking, nothing. These people work from the top of the mountain all the way down, and they pick through hundreds of thousands of trees every season. Mm-hmm. And they're carrying these baskets on their backs, and then they're also trained to pick. You know, I was told that they were trained to pick the perfectly ripe cherries. What they would do is they would paint their thumbs, because they're picking with their thumbs mm-hmm. and their pointer finger, essentially. They would paint the color of the cherry on their thumbs, like nail polish. Ugh. So they would be able to say, oh, that's the right color. That's what I have to pick.
That is so interesting.
And so the amount of effort and work that goes into just picking, now you're talking about like the farming methods also. I mean, mm-hmm. like planting the trees and managing the trees and cutting back the weeds and just the amount of time and effort. And you're not doing it on flat land like mm-hmm. we do, you know, like we grow corn or other products here in the States or anywhere else in the world. I mean, these are mountainsides. Mm-hmm. And so just the labor is just so difficult in those countries. And then if the coffee is processed properly, if the coffee is dried properly, and then it's shipped properly, and then it gets to us. I mean, there's so many steps along the way. It's not like wine where it's made on a beautiful vineyard in France, and mm-hmm. it's, you know, the millionaire owner drives up in his Bentley, and, you know, it's like, it's not like that at all. I mean, you're in trucks trying to get up a dirt road. It's misty or raining out. I mean, mm-hmm. it's...
And you can say this because you've done it.
I was in El Salvador a couple of months ago, and it was fantastic. I mean, going out to the farm, meeting the farmers, learning how they process coffee and how they grow coffee, and then, you know, learning about the people that work on the farms and their lives and things like that. And then obviously tasting all the coffees and being so wowed by the quality. Mm-hmm. But they put a lot of effort into it. A lot of effort goes into it. And then, you know, then you have to, you know, then you tack on all the time and money and effort that it goes into, you know, just getting it here and then roasting it and then brewing it. And so when you get a dollar cup of coffee, rest assured it is not the best quality coffee mm-hmm. because it couldn't be a dollar otherwise, you know. Somebody has to make money right. along the entire chain.
Right.
So if you're paying a dollar for that cup of coffee, it's not the super best coffee that you can buy. There's mm-hmm. so much better out there. So yeah, you should be willing to at least try some better cups of coffee. Mm-hmm. And if you pay $3 or $4 and you really enjoy it, what does it matter? You pay a lot more for a beer, a lot more for a glass of wine. Heck, sometimes you even pay more for a bottle of water, depending on where you are.
That's true.
Coffee is just, you know, one of those things. It's I think it's number two as a commodity behind oil. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it's everywhere. It's ubiquitous. But there are grades of coffee, just like everything else. Mm-hmm. And if you want to drink something that is inherently delicious, done well, then you're going to have to pay a little bit for it. You should be willing to.
And we're, of course, talking to Jason Richter, owner of Path Coffee Roasters in Port Chester, who just kind of told us exactly why specialty coffee is a little bit more expensive than our commodity coffee. So you're going through all these various things. So commodity coffee, how would that be harvested differently?
Mechanical picking. So in Brazil, they have these huge agro farms. They're very flat. They're low elevation. At lower elevations, coffees tend to be a little bit, we use the word dirty, but they're just earthier. Mm-hmm. They're not as refined. You don't have that sort of sweet acidity like you would with a high-grown Arabica coffee from somewhere. Could mm-hmm. be El Salvador, Colombia, wherever. And they're mechanically picked. So it's a machine that literally goes down the row of coffee, and it shakes the trees, and whatever falls out, that's what gets processed. I'm sure there is some hand picking, you know, hand sorting, and there's also sort of there are these optical sorters that can sort through coffees. I don't know if they sort through the cherries so much as they sort through the actual processed beans. But, a lot of it is just mechanical picking, and it's not refined. Specialty coffees are hand-picked, hand-sorted. Mm-hmm. You know, you're getting a lot less. You know, you're that's another reason why they're more expensive, because you're not picking everything, and mm-hmm. a tree doesn't mature all at the same time, so you have to pick through a tree a couple of times. But mechanical sorting and all the other sort of automated processes go into producing lower grade, lower priced coffees typically. Mm-hmm. There's also different grades of coffee, or there's Arabica and you have Robusta coffees. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Arabica coffees are always going to be better coffees, but there are certain grades of coffees within that spectrum. And then you have your Robusta coffees, and those are always going to be sort of lower grade coffees, mm-hmm. you know, freeze-dried coffees or some other bigger named, you know, commodity coffee.
Some fun stuff.
You don't typically want to drink straight Robustas.
I don't think so.
I've tasted them many times. But it's not something you would be like, oh, I'm super excited to drink this.
Yeah.
So those coffees are usually the really cheap stuff that you find on the grocery store shelves.
Okay.
Well, we have to take a quick break. You're listening to Fork This with Intoxicate. Keep it locked right here at 1490 WGCH. Welcome back to Fork This with Intoxicate. I'm Intoxicate Kate Slunts, your host, serving up info to tantalize those taste buds every Tuesday from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on 1490 WGCH and WGCH.com. Now, if you're looking to book your next night out, make sure to keep it locked right here, or for a personal recommendation, you can hit me up on Facebook or Instagram at Intoxicate Foodie. Of course, that's Intoxicate with a K. We're chatting with Jason Richter of Path Coffee Roasters in Portchester.
Tell me a little bit about the coffee that we're sipping on today, because I, you know, walked in and you had poured yourself a cup of coffee and you were very nice enough to share with me, which I'm sitting here enjoying while we are chatting. Yeah. So what are we drinking today?
This is a East African coffee from Burundi. Burundi's always been a great coffee for us. It's just a really delicious cup of coffee. It's just super fruity, but not like ripe fruit, more like dark sort of dried fruits. It's got great acidity, sweet, just rich, full mouth feel, good body. And when I say body, I mean the difference between, like, let's say water and whole milk. That sort of that texture on your tongue, yeah. And that sort of feel. And, you know, the one thing that is really important, and hopefully we'll do with some home barista classes in the future, is just helping people understand how to make coffee to sort of maximize the flavor that you can get out of that coffee, mm-hmm. and fix any issues, whether it's too astringent or drying on your tongue or bitter, or it's just not strong enough, or it's sour. And there's so many things that you can do to a coffee when you brew it that will affect the flavor.
So I love this, because this is, you know, I think the important part that the listeners are probably going to, like, really, like, perk up at, no pun intended. But when we're talking about the minute now the coffee is in our hands and we're making coffee at home or maybe in the office. So let's say we're picking up the coffee from you, because we can order online. Well, we're not picking it up from you. We can order online on your website.
You can come pick it up here. We have a roastery pickup option.
So do you? Okay.
Yeah. So if you order on our website, you could choose to come here and grab it. We'll just send you a quick email that it's ready.
That's great. So we're picking it up from you.
Good.
And we're taking it home. How should we store it?
Well, you want to keep it in the bag.
Okay.
And you want to put it in a cool, dry spot, like your cupboard, mm-hmm. and just leave it there. And only grind up. Hopefully, you're getting whole bean. Mm-hmm. But you want to only grind what you need for that batch, that cup.
Okay.
Or that pot of
so
coffee.
We're grinding on demand.
Yes.
What I know, there's a whole science here to making the best cup of coffee.
There's definitely ratios that work. Mm-hmm. It's a 16-to-1 ratio that I like. That is my ratio for about 2 8-ounce cups, or almost 2 10-ounce cups, really, is 32 grams of coffee to 512 grams of water. Okay. So we weigh both because those are consistent things that we can sort of manage. Mm-hmm. Temperature of your water also matters. You know, you typically want to have your water around 205 degrees when you start pouring. But the one thing you only really want to have to adjust as you're making coffee is your grind setting. Mm-hmm. Coarser or grinder, or coarser or finer, depending on the flavors that you're getting out of your coffee. So if you keep your water the same weight, you keep your coffee the same weight, and you just adjust your grind setting, you can really dial in that coffee pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. And it's just kind of understanding what those flavors are that you're getting and then how to adjust for them, you know, one way or the other.
So for a novice like myself, if I purchase coffee from you, do you give kind of instructions like, hey, this might be a little, you know, grind it this way?
Yeah, well, you know, every grinder is a little bit different. So it's hard for me to give instruction on how to grind the coffee. I could certainly, you know, tell you the ratio for mm-hmm. coffee and water that I think will work best in a pour over. So that's, I'm talking pour over method like a Kalita Wave or a V60 or mm-hmm. something where you're manually pouring water over coffee. Mm-hmm. When you're batch brewing and like a home brewer, the ratios might change, but you still want to be in that 16-to-1 ratio. So however much water you're putting in, you have that ratio with the coffee. And I think that I'm very happy to communicate with my customers if they have a question. Like, I think the best place to start really is to just make the coffee at home the way you always make it. Mm-hmm. You know, hopefully you have a good grinder, a burr grinder, not a little spice grinder. Spice mm-hmm. grinders are terrible
okay.
for coffee for a few reasons. Just you're never going to get even particle, you know, you're never going to get it to grind properly. Let's just put it that way.
Okay.
So if you want to get a good grinder, get a burr grinder, and you know, start somewhere. And then that's, you know, once you know what those flavors are that you're getting, then you can kind of adjust from there.
Okay. That's fair.
And then, I mean, it's hard to give a person like a definitive, oh, be at number 22.
Right.
Because everybody's grinder is a little bit different. And, you know, some might not have as many steps along the way, you know, as you fine or coarse. And
that's true.
Yeah. So it's best to just do it and then taste it and understand what you're tasting mm-hmm. and then how to adjust for that. That's kind of where the science and the technique kind of coincide, you know, mm-hmm. come together.
Well, I know you're going to, you know, currently on my social media platforms, I have a video of you teaching us how to make the perfect cup of coffee. So you're going to show the pour over method. So can you just describe the pour over method for people that might be, you know, using their pod application coffees currently?
Yeah, no, sure. So I like pour over. I do it at home, typically on the weekends, mm-hmm. For me and my wife. It just makes a really great rich cup of coffee, and I like it because I can dial it in, like, because mm-hmm. coffee does change, you know, it's not this static thing, it's always adjusting itself, and so sometimes you have to make an adjustment on your grind setting to account for the age of the coffee. Mm-hmm. People talk about fresh coffee is not necessarily coffee that just came out of the roaster either. I mean, I think for espresso you should let it sit for like a week, because it has to give off some of this carbon dioxide that's in the coffee that's built up after roasting, degassing, we call it. And if you don't do that, then it inhibits extraction. And that's the same for pour over or any other method. So essentially getting to your question, how do you make a pour over? You can buy the pour over carafe. Mm-hmm. You can buy the pour over dripper. Mm-hmm. It could be a V60. It could be a Kalita Wave. Could be a Melita plastic thing that you get in the grocery store, though I would advise against that. You get the appropriate filters for it, and then you grind up your coffee to the ratio, whatever that ratio is. I like 32 to 512. And then you just pour. And what I've learned over the years is that there is no right or wrong way to make coffee. Mm-hmm. There is no exact. There is just whatever tastes good to you mm-hmm. or the people around you. Mm-hmm. So I make it this way and I pour it this way, the way that I'm going to show you, because that's what works for me. Mm-hmm. But I pour in stages, and I typically do my first pour, which is called a bloom. And that's, everybody does that, and you should always do that. What you're doing is you're preparing the coffee, you're saturating the grinds, you're basically making it easier to extract going forward. Mm-hmm. So you pour essentially three times as much water as coffee onto the grind. So if I have 32, I pour 90 grams of water over the coffee bed mm-hmm. in a circle and try and saturate all the coffee grinds and then let it just sit there. And you'll notice that fresh coffee will kind of bloom out, sort of expand and bubble. Mm. If it's old or stale coffee, it won't do any of that. It'll just either fall in on itself or just stay flat. Mm. And then you let that sit for about 30 seconds. And then you start pouring water. Mm-hmm. You know, I go to 212, then 312, then 412, then 512.
Okay.
And each time I let the water kind of drip out a little bit, not all the way so that you can see the grinds, but, you know, kind of let the water go through a little bit and then pour more. And at the very end, on the last pour, I do a little swirl.
Oh.
And the swirl flattens the coffee bed.
Okay.
Because you want that even extraction mm-hmm. all the way through the coffee bed. Because if you have high points and low points, water will go wherever it's easiest. Mm-hmm. So you'll get more extraction on the low points and less extraction on the high points, and it'll just be inconsistent. So consistency is, in my opinion, the key.
Mm-hmm. And I've been dying to ask you this question. How do you feel about iced coffee?
I don't drink iced coffee. I've been drinking our cold brew.
Okay.
So we're at the farmer's market in Portchester every Sunday, and we sell our signature cold brew, which is a concentrate. So I always tell people when they're just want it straight with some ice that it's a pretty strong, pretty strong coffee. But when you add milk, and if you like sugar, you add that to it, it's just super chocolatey, just delicious, got really nice acidity to it still. Little fruitiness, because the Burundi that we're drinking today is actually in that blend.
Oh, okay.
It's my little secret divulged. But yeah, so it's a really delicious cold brew. So I've been drinking that a lot. I've been bringing that home. My wife has been asking me about that.
Is that something that you can order on the website?
Not yet. So okay. We're going to have a new website up very soon, pathcoffees.com. That's coffees with an S. Mm-hmm. And so that new website will have a lot of new great stuff on it, including some cool home barista equipment.
Oh, nice.
Things that we've kind of curated over the years that we use, that I use at home, mm-hmm. That we use here in the office. So only things that we use. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want people to, like, buy stuff from me that I've never even tried before. That doesn't make any sense.
That doesn't make any sense.
So, but yeah, the cold will be on there, and then we'll have all our coffees will be on there, and there'll be some great new features to that website, because the current one doesn't offer a lot of great stuff that I think people will be interested in. Mm-hmm. Robust subscriptions, some point and rewards features.
Oh, cool.
So people will actually be able to save a little bit of money over time. So, and lots of other cool things. So and please check the website and you'll see a changeover at some point.
Yeah. We'll have to, you know, you'll have to let me know so I can then blast it out to everybody. Like, yes, hey, it's
absolutely
updated.
That'd be great.
How many like varieties usually of coffee do you have for people to choose from?
We typically have coffee from Central and South America, Africa, and sometimes Indonesia.
Oh,
so a lot of our coffees come from Central and South America and Africa. Sorry.
Okay.
Not Kenya specifically. But we do have sometimes Kenyan coffees, Ethiopian coffees. We're seasonal. So we're really focusing on sort of trying to find coffees at their peak. You know, as they land here in the U.S., after they've gone through their process in the country, mm-hmm. they land here. I want to try and snap them up as fast as possible. Mm-hmm. Because even green coffee will lose its snap after a while. Not like a week, more like 4 to 6 months, but we want to buy coffee at its freshest mm-hmm. so that as we're roasting through it, it remains very delicious. Mm-hmm. And, you know, coffee changes even in the green state. So, yeah, you want to get it as fresh as possible. So seasonality is really important to me. And then just having a variety of different coffees and flavors. My menu is not huge. You know, there's some coffee companies out there like 20 different coffees. I'm like, that's a lot of inventory. That's a lot of coffee to have. But then again, you know, I mean, if I just focus on just finding coffees that I think are delicious, that my customers will enjoy. I've always sort of gone down the road of unique but approachable. I don't want to sell a coffee that I don't think people will inherently like. Mm-hmm. Just because it's expensive or just because I think it's a cool coffee doesn't mean that my customers will have any interest in that coffee. Mm-hmm. Maybe just as a fun try, but I can't just buy a bag of coffee.
Right.
You know, so it has to be something that is delicious and that that my customers and future customers will enjoy. Mm-hmm. And so I'm always looking out for those coffees. And but they tend to come from Central South America, and we're going to be getting some new El Salvadorian coffees on the Ooh. Menu now that, you know, farms that I've went out to recently. I'm bringing in some coffees and something from Guatemala soon. So yeah, some new exciting stuff.
It's very exciting. I also didn't realize how seasonal it was.
Just like fruits and vegetables.
Yeah.
I mean, we're so sort of, it's tough because, you know, you can get a strawberry at any time of the year, but that doesn't mean it's a seasonal product and it's not at its best necessarily in the dead of winter.
Right.
You know, but you can get it. Same thing with coffee. You can get it, but it's not going to be its best.
Mm-hmm. So. Kind of like the mealy tomatoes. That's always my go-to.
Mealy tomatoes?
A mealy tomato. You're not getting a good tomato in the winter.
No.
They're going to be mealy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I prefer like nice heirloom tomatoes these days.
Yeah.
The uglier, more the delicious.
It's true.
It's always funny to me that people look at them and they're like, ew, why would I eat that? And like, because that tastes great.
The more color and the more bumps and I love it. Wanted to talk to you also about your customer and what your customer looks like, because I know you sell a couple of different ways.
Yes.
So you have consumer to the home brewer.
We sell on our website directly to the consumer, mm-hmm. yes, for their home. If you wanted to order for your office, by all means. Mm-hmm. We also sell wholesale to cafes and restaurants, and then we sell to offices as well. Mm-hmm. And all throughout that, we can certainly help with equipment if needed, mm-hmm. and obviously training and things like that. And that's kind of what our space is here in Port Chester. Mm-hmm. It's an educational space for professionals. It's a place to kind of come and taste new coffees and learn about coffee. Whether you're a home barista or a professional, it's mm-hmm. a place for us to bring in our wholesale customers. And so it's not a cafe. So unfortunately, we don't sell drinks here.
No.
But people are more than welcome to get in touch with us and, you know, tell us, hey, can I come down and visit you? And I'd be more than happy to hang out for a bit and chat and maybe introduce you to some of our coffees.
What's the best way for them to go about contacting you? The website?
Oh, yeah. You can just send me a quick email. You can just jason@pathcoffees.com. Mm-hmm. Or you can go on our website and submit a form through our website.
Perfect.
Yeah. So any way you want to get in touch with me, you can. We're on Google, so you can find us.
Google us.
Google us.
Also, you're going to be offering classes here, correct?
Yes, soon. That's the goal, is to start offering like home barista classes, teach people how to make their coffee better, how to identify those flavors that they might like or not like, and then how to kind of dial in their coffee. Obviously, we want to talk a bit about process and coffee and how it comes to us and mm-hmm. things like that. So it's a class that I'm looking to put together and hopefully get that out there, and hopefully people will come out and visit.
Well,
and take the class.
You'll have to let me know so I can also put that up on intoxicate.com under the events section so we can let people know. Because I do have to say, again, you know, I said this at the very start of the interview, that it was a real education that I definitely benefited from moving forward on this, because, you know, you really taught me how to make the best cup of coffee. And I think, you know, when you have really great knowledge can be power.
And, yeah, I mean, I love talking about it, so.
I'm fascinated. How many times have we sat here in these two chairs and discussed coffee?
Yeah.
And I just feel like every time I speak with you, there's something new that I learn, or, you know, something that just kind of sticks with me, that when I'm, you know, sitting and enjoying my cup, that I'm like, oh, you know, you really, really understand and, think about the whole process when you're enjoying that cup of coffee?
I think at the end of the day, coffee can be as complicated or as simple as you want to make it. Mm-hmm. I make it more complicated than most because it's my business. Mm-hmm. But it shouldn't be complicated for the average person who wants to make a good cup of coffee at home. Mm-hmm. It really shouldn't. And so I think it's my job to go through all the complicated stuff and distill it down so that the person at home or in their office or in their business can just make delicious coffee and really not worry about it. Mm-hmm. Just know that Jason has done his homework. He's told me exactly what to do. And oh, by the way, the coffee tastes delicious.
Well, I also find the coffee fascinating, the story. You know, that's what I really like thinking about. I mean, that's what I do. I'm a storyteller.
No, I mean, I just, when going down to El Salvador, I met with this amazing family, and they own a farm called Monte Verde, and that's the coffee that we're bringing in. We're bringing in two types of coffee from them. We're bringing in a natural coffee, a natural processed coffee, and a honey processed coffee.
Oh, okay.
And both wildly different. The natural processed coffee, I told somebody recently that it tasted like peanut butter and jelly. Like,
wow.
Literally peanut butter and, like, strawberry jelly in your mouth. It's delicious.
Wow.
And the honey coffee is much more subdued, but it's, like, crisper, and it's got just nice sort of lemony, fruity flavors, and it's just sweet and just a bit nutty and chocolatey, and I don't know. It's just got great flavor, but totally different coffees from the same farm and processed at the same time, but just different ways. Mm-hmm. And if you take the class, you'll learn exactly all about honeyed and natural coffees and try them. So, I think that, you know, I should do the hard work, the heavy lifting, and let the person who's making the coffee at home just enjoy it.
Yeah, you make it easy.
I try to. It's not that complicated, really. It's coffee. It's not. It's not brain surgery.
It's not, but I think, you know, we're probably making it sound much more complicated than it is because we're talking about so many different things that you have to worry about.
Yes.
But I find that whole process very interesting, and I think when someone is enjoying a cup of coffee or is as fascinated with food and coffee as I am, you know, that story becomes very interesting.
Well, I like talking to people who appreciate food and coffee, and it's not just something they consume. Mm-hmm. Because that allows me to kind of go a little bit farther than I would normally go with my thoughts and but I don't know. I've always loved coffee. I wasn't always into coffee the way I am now. Mm-hmm. So I understand, you know, how somebody could be like, oh, well, it's just coffee. Mm-hmm. You know, but it doesn't have to be just coffee. Mm-hmm. And people will, you know, make coffee. And my sister-in-law asked me this question a long, long time ago. And I think a lot of people probably ask themselves this question sometimes, but they don't. So she asked me the question of, like, can I do this to my coffee? Can I add more coffee to the brewer or whatever? And I'm like, of course you can. Like, I guess people get stuck in their ways and they think, like, well, if I made it this way, I've always got to make it this way because that's how coffee's made.
Right.
But that's totally the wrong way to look at it because coffee changes and every coffee is a little bit different. If you have a lighter roasted coffee, you're going to have to grind it a little bit finer. Mm-hmm. If you have a really dark roasted coffee that has, like, maybe even some oil on it, you want to grind that coarser. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, but there's just so many little things to know, but you can do anything you want.
I love it.
You can put any coffee you want into an espresso machine. There is no such thing as espresso coffee. There's just coffee and just an espresso machine. And espresso is just the fact that you're forcing water through coffee. It's the method.
It's the method, not the
but,
coffee.
But, I mean, yes, that being said, I take that back slightly because you can make a coffee that tastes much better in an espresso machine. You can make a blend or roast it a certain way so it will taste better coming out of an espresso machine. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that that is the only type of coffee that should go into that espresso machine. A lot of people are doing single origin shots now.
Okay.
I mean, so yeah, you can do anything you want.
Sounds good.
Be willing to experiment.
I love that. I love that. That's going to be the note that we end on. Be willing to experiment.
Yeah.
Be playful with it.
It should be fun. I guess. I mean, that's my thought process.
Well, Jason, thank you so much for coming on today's show.
Thank you so much for having me.
I love it. We have to take a quick break. You're listening to Fork This with Intoxicate on 1490 WGCH, Westchester Talk Radio, and of course, your favorite podcast platforms.
Well, we have to take a quick break. You're listening to Fork This with Intoxicate. Keep it locked right here at 1490 WGCH.